talk is loosely based on a talk that I gave at the last Mac Hack, in case you know what Mac Hack is.
Was,
that's right, and this is the last one. And what I tried to do was summarize the entire AppleScript language and to a bunch of, you know, language experts. I mean, these are smart guys. They know a lot of programming languages, and I wanted to sort of characterize quite specifically what AppleScript is like. And what I've done for purposes of this talk is take some of the slides and some of the examples from that talk so that I can show them as just features of the language that you might not have thought are there. Wait a sec, I may have to prepare this. Hang on a sec, I forgot to do this. Watch this. Here we go. There we go, okay. That's it. All right. Okay, we're off to see the wizard. All right, so these are aspects of the AppleScript language that you may never use. I don't necessarily advise you to use them, but I think they're pretty fascinating. Now, as you know, one of the features of AppleScript is that it's English-like, something that I don't like at all. If you read my book, you know that I rail against this. But a thing that I do like about it is that it is what I call Lisp-like. Now, Lisp is a language, a computer language, often used for teaching computer science. The basis of the first year computer science course at MIT uses Lisp, actually a Lisp derivative called Scheme. There's a wonderful book called The Structure and Interpretation of Programming, of Program, Computer Programs, by Sussman and... Anyway, it's a wonderful book. It may be the greatest book ever written. My book is just modeled after it. And one of the things that Lisp is all about is lists, and this is the reason why lists exist in AppleScript. Now, you know, you put things between the little curly braces and you get yourself a list. And you know that you can run down the list and you can get things out of it. But it turns out that the reason that lists are so important is because lists are important in the Lisp language. And let me show you an example of the kind of thing that you would do in Lisp. Now, this is... Let me get rid of that. This is a Lispy version of something that you might do. And it uses a very Lispy trick called recursion. And let me explain what it does and how it works. And you can all see this for it. Now, first of all, you'll notice that it's impossible to figure out just by looking what's happening. That's very, very typical of Lisp, okay? Here's the object of the game. You have lists in AppleScript, but they foolishly left out a lot of the things that you'd like to do with a list. Haven't you ever noticed that one of the things you can't do with a list, there's no built-in verb to do this, there's no way to eliminate one member of a list. So this is a routine called REM, that stands for remove, right? REMV stands for remove. IX, that stands for the index. Remove from the list the item whose index is numbered whatever. So here I've got a 3-item list, Manny, Moe, and Jack, if you know who they are, and the object of the game is to remove item 2. Now, first, let's talk about how you would... First of all, the fact that you have to write this routine at all is ridiculous. Why hasn't AppleScript provided you with utilities for doing things to lists? Don't get me started about how silly that is. Any self-respecting language, Perl, Ruby, whatever, that has arrays or list-like things would give you a verb for doing this. Not AppleScript, okay? So you have to roll your own. Every single one of you has to roll your own. You have to reinvent the wheel. You need this routine. Okay. But you surely would never have thought of writing it the way I'm writing it. How would you do it? Well, this is what you would do. You'd say, okay, I'll hold up an empty list, right? And now what I'll do is I'll get each item from the list and put it in the other one, except when I come to the one that we don't want, I won't put it in the other one. So you'd say, okay, so I'll repeat with I from one to the length of the list, right? Then item I, is I the X I'm supposed to remove? No. Okay, set end of my list to this item. All right, on to the next one. Two, is that the one I'm supposed to? No, that's the one. Okay, skip that. Okay, on to the next one. Three, that's not the one. Set end of, and then when I'm all done, I've got this list and it's got all the items. Okay, that's what you would do. You would use a repeat loop, okay? This doesn't use.
We'll pretend that way.
What?
We will pretend that's the way we'll
do it. Okay, that's what you're going to do. All right. But that's not what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do is recurse. That's not a bad word. Recurse is not the same as cursing. Recurse means I'm going to dive into the same handler again and again. And here I have a handler. Remvix, on Remvix, defined at the top of the screen. And you will notice that at this point in the routine calls itself. How can this be? Well, it turns out that you're allowed to do this in most programming languages, and you're allowed to do it in AppleScript. Now, before I explain this to you, I must say, I do not advise you actually to do this. This is a lot of fun, and it's amazing that AppleScript can do it, but there's a problem. When you recurse, the stack grows. Tell me, have you ever seen when you were programming in AppleScript and you made a mistake of some kind, have you ever seen that message come back saying stack overflow? That was it, okay? If my list, Manny, Moe, and Jack, were much, much longer, and how long it would have to be depends upon all kinds of aspects of like what the routine does, so I can't give you an exact number. Could be in the hundreds, could be in the thousands, could be in the tens of thousands, but sooner or later, you could have a list that would be too long, and if you tried to recurse your way all the way through the list, you'd get a stack overflow. Now, that does not happen in a language like Lisp. So AppleScript is Lispy, but it's not as Lispy as all that. Just the same, let me show you how to recurse. Now, recursion, I could spend the whole night talking about recursion. You might not get past this exam. Recursion is like jumping off a cliff with your eyes closed and just believing that there's some guy with a net down there to catch you. Because basically what you're doing is creating a situation that looks like you have an infinite loop. But the loop is not infinite. And the way to convince yourself that the loop is not infinite is to look at the conditions under which the loop happens. And for that reason, what I've done is I've put the end cases first. And always do this with when you recurse. Now look at the structure of how I'm going to recurse. When you recurse in Lisp, you pretend that the problem is solved for the case where the list is one shorter than the list you actually have. So what I do is I separate out the first item of the list from the rest of the list. Now, you probably didn't even know there was a word rest in AppleScript. But it is part of the AppleScript language. And the reason it's part of the AppleScript language is that in Lisp, this is what you do all the time. You separate off the first item and the rest. And you treat the first item in a special way, and then you recurse on the rest of the list. Now look at the choice that I'm making here. Imagine that I have a list, and that the thing that I'm supposed to eliminate is the first item of the list. Now, I know it's not. It's the second item. But pretend it's the first item. Or not. There are only two cases. Either it's the first item or it isn't. Well, if it's the first item, then the correct answer to the problem is the rest of the list. Everything but the first item. Okay, suppose it's not the first item. Then I do want the first item in the list, and I want you to run Remvix on the rest of the list, except that in that case, I have to reduce the index that I'm looking for by one. Why? Well, look, think of the first case. Here I'm looking for item number two, which is Mo. So is item number two Manny? No. So I'll include Manny in the result, and now I've got a shorter list. So because the list is shorter, I need to reduce the two to be one. Now, Mo is going to be the first item of my shorter list. So if you think of it that way, you realize this is the general case. I'm either going to eliminate or keep the first item of the list, and then I'm going to run the thing on the rest of the list. How will it ever end? It will end, because sooner or later, I will have eliminated all the members of the list. The list will be empty. I'm going to get a shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter list until there's nothing. And then the answer is nothing. The way to eliminate an item from an empty list is to return the empty list. So I claim this is actually going to work. Let's try. So if this works, I should end up with just Manny and Jack. Here we go. Yep. There's my result over there. This is script debugger. And if I change my index to 1, then I should get just Mo and Jack. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Yep. And if I change my index to 3, I should just get Manny and Mo. Yep. It works. It works. I am recursive. The routine is calling itself. Now, this is actually a very efficient way to describe what it is that you want done. I love recursion. But as I say, you'd never think of doing this, and you probably didn't even know the word rest existed in AppleScript. But the reason why it exists is because when they were inventing AppleScript, they were very heavily influenced by Lisp, and they were thinking of making it quite Lisp-like. And so it's got all these lispy features left over. And I wrote to the guy that invented AppleScript, a guy named Cook, and I said, I've noticed there's all these lispy features. Is there some reason for that? He said, oh, yeah, we were very heavily influenced by Lisp. We were, you know, we were drinking a lot of Lisp back when we were writing this language, you know. That's why they're in there. Can everybody follow the example?
Yeah,
it really is like jumping off a cliff. Because you're saying, the routine's going to call itself? How can that happen? And yet it can work. And you do it. Last time I gave this talk, I forgot to make this. Is anybody in the room a mathematician? You know what mathematical induction is? In mathematical induction, there's two ways to prove something in mathematics, and one of them is to use induction. In number theory, the way you prove something in using induction is you say, all right, I'll prove it. Induction is something where you prove something is true of all the natural numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dot, 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 to infinity. Now, how could you prove something is true of all the natural numbers? Well, first you prove it for 1. Then you prove that if it's true for a number, call it k, it's true for the number k plus 1. If you can prove that, you've proved it for every number. Because you proved it for 1, and you've proved that if it's true for any number, it's true for the next number. Now it's true for every number in succession. Yeah. That's what recursion is like, okay? First, I handle the end cases. I have an empty list, or I have found the item at the beginning, or I haven't found the item at the beginning. Then I recurse. I've covered every possibility, and therefore, I don't loop forever. The program works. This is all in my book. That's recursion. Well, I like that example. All right. Well, you weren't impressed by that. We'll go on to the next one. Okay. Script objects. Now, the last time I gave this talk, I completely neglected the possibility that Shane and Ray might have failed in their duty to have explained to you what a script object even is. That's because it turns out that people can program in AppleScript for years without finding out that there are script objects in this language. So the first thing, I'm not going to make that mistake this time. The first thing I'm going to do is show you that there are script objects. You're all looking at me as if I didn't. As if you didn't know what it was. That's good. I want you not to know. I'm going to show you. Okay, watch. I'm going to make one. This is really weird. You're not going to believe that you can do this. If you've never seen a script object, you're going to be going, what the? Okay, here we go. Okay. This is how you start a script object. You know how when you make a handler, you start with the word on? So I could say on H, and then I could say, you know, do something. I could say return hello, and I could say end, right? That's a legitimate thing. And then I could call H, and I get the result hello. All right, so you know how to do that. Well, this is like that, except it's not a handler. It's a script object. And you say, so you say script S. And you say end. And you say S. And it says, okay, that was a script. It's a script. It's a script object that consists of the line return hello. Right? I don't know what else to tell you. S is a script object. So you say script and give it a name. And then you have some code. And then you have and. And you have a script object. Why? Don't look at me. Now, actually, this is actually a useful thing. Let me explain why. Because things can go inside here. What can go inside a script object? Answer, anything that can go in a script can go in a script object. In fact, unbeknownst to you, when you write a script in AppleScript, the entire file is considered by AppleScript to be a script object. So it is simply a specific case of something that exists on a much more general level in AppleScript that you may not have known was there at all. So, for example, I can have a script property. You know how at the top of your script you can say property P. Hello, right? You can do that. Well, you can do that inside the script. Instead of returning hello, this time I'll return P. Okay, it still isn't happening, but you get the idea. All right. So why would I ever want to do that? Why would I want to put the property P inside S? I'll tell you that in a minute. I can also have handlers inside the script. So I could say on do your thing, return P, and. So I've got a handler inside the script. Now this is quite interesting because have you noticed you can't put a handler inside a handler in AppleScript? If you try to say this on H2, and it won't compile. It doesn't like that. You can't put a handler inside a handler, but you can put a handler inside a script object. Okay, what can you do with a script object? Well, first of all, I'd like to point out that one really cool thing about script objects is they give you namespaces. Now, what is a namespace? A namespace is a way of taking a term like P or do your thing and dividing it off so that only a part of your program can see it. This can really help your code because otherwise names start trouncing one another. It's very good to isolate the pieces that don't need to know about each other. So this is very cool. And I'm going to prove to you that none of the rest of the program can see P or hello. So what I'll do is I'll say, do your thing, all right? That's the handler that's inside there, right? I'll try to run this program. No, I don't know anything about do your thing. Why? Because it's hidden inside the script object S. I'll do the same thing with P. I'll say return P. I'll try to run the program. No, I've never heard of a variable P. So you see, the script object S knows about the property P. The script object S knows about the property, knows about the handler do your thing. And do your thing knows about P. That's not a problem because they're all inside the script object together. But outside, nobody knows about it. That's called scoping. And at one of the AppleScript Pro sessions, these guys gave me a bottle of scope with this label that said Matt Newberg, Master of Scope. And it's one of my proudest possessions, and it's still sitting on my mantle because this whole chapter in my book is dedicated to explaining about scope. And what is scope? Scope is simply the question of what areas in your program can see or cannot see stuff that lives in other areas of your program. And if you've got a script object, things outside the script object can't see into it. Okay, so how do you get in? You get in through the script object. So it's true I can't talk about P, but I can talk to S and then get P. So here's what I'm going to do. I'll say, tell S, return P. Oh, that didn't work. I have to say it's. Ah! I used the magic word it's, and all of a sudden I can talk to S and get its P. And I can run its do your thing. Watch this. Do your thing. Handler, run it. Works. So I can send the handler message. If I send it to S, I can send it. I can send it. Now, there's other ways to do this. Instead of saying tell S, I can say S is P. Let me get rid of this stuff. So I can say S is P. That works. Whoop, didn't work. S is, I misspelled it. Thank you. I haven't even had the bourbon yet. And I can say S is do your thing. Ting. Yeah. And, or I could say, now can I say do your thing of S? Yep. Can I say P of S? Yep. So as long as I explain to AppleScript that this belongs to S, I can get inside of S and get pieces of it. And I can change them. I can change them. So I could say, all right, set S's P to eat my shorts. Then I can say, tell S to do your thing. As long as I'm talking to S, I can have access. Oh, eat my shorts, it works. So that's what a script object is. Now, how many times have I've been writing AppleScript for years, okay? Practical AppleScript that do things. How many times in my life have I ever actually used script objects in a working program? I would have to say the number is vanishingly close to zero. It might not actually be zero, but it's so close that it might as well be zero. I've looked at lots of AppleScript programs written by people, smart people. I almost never see them actually use script objects. It's like this amazing feature. And yet it's really kind of cool, even just because of the namespace, it's cool. But that's not what I'm here to tell you about. No! The namespace is the least of it. Script objects are objects. They're objects just like the number one or the string hello. I mean, look. I can set... Let me just use a different example for a minute. I can set X to hello. And then I can say return X. And what is X? It's hello. Okay. Now I'm going to set X to S. Why not? The script object is a thing. I can assign it to other things. So I've just set X to S. Now I claim that X is now the script object S. Now to prove it, I'm going to talk to X as if it were S. So I'm going to say, tell X. If I can find the mouse, there it is. Tell X to do your thing. Now this is only going to work if X really is the script object S. It does work. So I can take this script object and assign it places. Whoa! Well, you can do much more than that. In this example, not only do I assign a script object to a variable, I produce the script object from a handler, like a rabbit from a hat. Look at the handler, greeter maker. Greeter maker contains a script object. You're not allowed to put a handler inside a handler, but you can put a script object inside a handler. So inside GreeterMaker, I create a script object called MyScript. So when GreeterMaker runs, it makes a script object called MyScript. Then it modifies the script object MyScript, which you saw me do a moment ago. It takes the property X that's inside there and changes it to S. Where did it get S? It got S as the parameter that was handed in to the handler GreeterMaker. And then,
this is the really cool part,
it returns the script object as the result. So when you call GreeterMaker, what you get back is a script object. All right? Let's think about what this thing is going to do. I'm going to call GreeterMaker, handing in the value hello. GreeterMaker will run. S is now hello. That's how a handler works. I create the script object MyScript, and then I take MyScript X and I set it to S, which is hello. So now MyScript has a property X, but it's not null anymore. It's hello. And there's a line of code in here, display dialog X. That's hello. I take that entire script object, just this, and return it. And I hand it into the variable value greeter, just like you saw me a moment ago with X. So now greeter is the script object that was produced by GreeterMaker. That's why it's called GreeterMaker. It makes greeters. Duh! And now I can talk to greeter as if it were a script object. Now, one of the things you can do to a script object is tell it to run. And that means any code that is inside you at top level, just run that code. Well, the only code inside MyScript at top level is display dialog X. So it's going to display the dialog. And the value of X by now has been set to the word hello, not null. So I should see a dialog with hello in it. And I do. Ta-da! Pretty good, huh? So, as you can see from this slide, the point is that it can be a handler result. You can produce a script object from a handler, like a rabbit from a hat. All right. But script objects are even cooler than that. They also have inheritance. How does inheritance work? I've got a whole section on my book about this. Well, here's how inheritance works. Let there be two script objects. It's all right. It's an informal talk. Oh, police are not going to be here. It's okay. Let there be two script objects. And let one of them have a property called parent. Now, this is very important. The word parent is reserved. Remember? Let me do a little rant here about AppleScript. Haven't you ever noticed that about 9 times out of 10, you choose a variable name in AppleScript and it won't let you use that variable name? This is because AppleScript has reserved words up the wazoo. That's a technical programming term, the wazoo. It's a place where you keep your variable name. And it's not telling you about them. And parent is one of those words. The reason you can never name anything parent in AppleScript is that it is reserved for this one use. It is reserved for the use of connecting one script object with another in the magical relationship of inheritance. So here we have two script objects called mommy and baby, script mommy and script baby. And the first thing that we do in script baby is declare that its parent is the script object mommy. That establishes the inheritance relationship. All right. So now I've told you that I've established the inheritance relationship. Now let me show you how inheritance works in action. So first I told you how to cause inheritance to be there. But now I'm going to tell you what inheritance is. What do you get for having established inheritance between baby and mommy? Here's the rule. The rule is that if script object baby inherits from script object mommy, then if I send a message to script object baby, and baby doesn't know how to handle that message, it passes the message on up to mommy to see if mommy can handle it. That's what inheritance is all about. And so now let's talk about what's going to happen when I call the handler tell wait. So I'm treating baby in the last line. I'm treating baby as a script object, and I'm calling its tell wait. You saw me do this earlier with my script object. I can send a handler message to a script object. But if you look in baby, you will see that baby has no handler tell wait. That's because a baby can't talk. It can't tell you its weight. You're asking the wrong person. You want to know the baby's weight. You can't talk to the baby. It doesn't know how to talk. So the baby doesn't have a tell wait handler. But the baby does have a parent, mommy. So when the message tell wait comes in here to the baby, we see that there's no tell wait handler in the script object baby, but we do have a parent, so the tell wait message is handed on to mommy. Now mommy does have a tell wait handler. And what does her tell wait handler do? Her tell wait handler says, display dialog my weight. Now you might think that that means I'm going to get a dialogue with the word null in it. Notice that mommy doesn't have a weight because she just doesn't tell. She can talk, but she's not telling her weight. But she's willing to tell you the baby's weight. And that is exactly what she does. Even though the handler is in mommy, the weight value we're going to get is not mommy's weight value, which is null. It's going to be the baby's weight value, which is 9 pounds. Here we go. That's it. Why? Because in an inheritance situation, if you use the word my means start with whoever was originally sent the message that got this whole thing going. Well, that was baby. We sent the tell wait message to baby. Therefore, when we look to see whose weight to get, we start with mommy's weight. Now, if the baby's weight. Now, if the baby had no weight, we would then move on up to mommy to get her weight. But because the baby does have a weight, we stop and fetch the 9 pounds. That's inheritance. Now, this is kind of an imitation of object orientation. You've heard of object orientation and subclassing. This is a thing that object-oriented languages have. Right? Let's in an object-oriented language, a standard example would be, well, okay, we can have a class quadruped, and we can have a subclass of quadruped dog, and we can have a subclass of dog, you know, schnauzer. Okay? And so, you know, we could have like a command, bark, and if I send the command bark to the schnauzer, it's handed on to the dog, and the dog says ruff. But if I send bark to the animal, it does nothing because not all animals can bark. You see what I'm saying? It's exactly that kind of thing. So this is AppleScript's strange little version of the class structure. How many programs, AppleScript programs, have I ever written that took serious programs, that took advantage of the inheritance feature of script objects? It is not vanishingly small, vanishingly close to zero. It is zero. I have never used, and I have never seen any script, except for an example in the AppleScript language guide. I have never seen any script that uses inheritance. But it's got to be good for something, dudes. Go out there and use it. Got to be useful somehow. It's in there. It's part of the language. You're writing in this language. Jeez, you may as well use it. What's your problem? God. Okay, that's inheritance.
Their child property?
No. No, there's no introspection. You can't find out like who all your children are. No, what can I say? Okay. Handlers as values. Well, this is just like what I was talking before about script objects. Remember a minute ago I said that you could take a handler, a script object, and assign it to a variable. You remember why I had this script object S, and I said set X to S. And now X was the same as that script object, and I could send messages to X as if it was the script object S. Well, you can do exactly the same thing with a handler. You just never wanted to, that's all. Now this is actually useful. Let me show you an example. Oh, sorry. Well, that's the hacker part. It's for hackers and slackers. Now, let me show you an example. Well, first let me just do one, okay, before I show you the example that I prepared. So let me make a handler on H display dialogue hello. That'll be a good one. Okay? And now I'll say set X to H. And you notice that the language does not at all complain. And you might say, well, what is X now? So I'll say return X to find out. And the answer is, well, I don't really know how to tell you what it is. It's kind of this handler. I'm not really sure. Okay, it's really having trouble explaining what that is. But I assure you that X is the handler, H. Now, what can you do with a handler? There's only one thing you can do with it. You can call it. And the way you call a handler, as you well know, is to put parentheses after its name. I know you've made the mistake of not putting the parentheses after its name, and then you get some terrible error. You thought you were calling the handler, but you weren't. And things did not run the way you expected. This has happened to you, right? I'm not just making this up. Right? That happens to people. He was looking at me like this had never happened. Come on, this happens to everybody. Okay. So what I'm saying is I claim that X is now the handler H, and therefore I can say X with parentheses after it, and that is calling X as a handler, and it is a handler, and therefore I should get the display dialog saying, hello, let's try it. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, go. Yes, it works. So you see, I can take the handler and assign it. Now you might say, that is totally useless. No, this actually is a useful one. I'll show you an example. Now, in this example, this is a real example that someone, in fact, this happened, Ray, this actually happened at one of the AppleScript Pro sessions, maybe the first one that I ever went to. Someone said, I've got this problem, this is what I'd like to do. And I said, I think what you need to do is make a list of handlers. And he said, you can do that. Because what he wanted to do was dispatch, he didn't know until runtime which handler he was going to call. Am I going to call handler 1, handler 2, handler 3? So he wanted to send out the message, but he didn't know which message he was going to send. You see what I'm saying? And I said, you can make a list of handlers. He said, can you make a list of handlers? Yes, you can. So in this example, I make a list of handlers. So I've got two totally different handlers, H1 and H2. Never mind what they do. Don't look inside H1 and H2. That's not the point. The point is I've got two totally different handlers, H1 and H2, and I make a list out of them. So what is L? Set L to the list, H1 followed by H2. What is that list? It is a list of two handlers. Then what I do is I call one of them depending what the user wants me to do in real time. So I'm going to put up a dialog with two buttons. You want to call handler number 1 or handler number 2. And button returned will either be 1 or 2. So I'm either going to call item 1 of L, which is H1, or I'm going to call item 2 of L, which is H2. So just like you saw me do a moment ago, I set X to that thing. So after this line, X is either going to be H1 or H2, and now I call it. So if I say 1 in my dialogue, all that crap about the finder is going to happen. The finder is going to activate, and I'm going to get a new finder window. But if I say 2 in my dialogue, I'm going to call H2, I'm going to get text edit, and I'm going to have a Hello World document. Let's see if it works. Somehow I think it will. Here we go. All right, I'll do number 1, and there's my new finder window. Okay, let's try it again. This time I'll do number 2, and there's my Hello World. Oh, I like when things go correctly. All right. Now, in this example, we take advantage of a loophole in the laws of AppleScript. Okay? Remember a moment ago, I showed you that the laws of AppleScript forbid me to put a handler inside a handler. But the laws of AppleScript allow me to put a handler inside a script object. And they allow me to put a script object inside a handler. I've shown you both of those. Therefore, to put a handler inside a handler, put the handler inside a script object inside a handler. Duh! Okay. You think I'm certifiably insane? It could be. Okay, so in this example, I have a handler, say day, inside a script object inside a handler. And this allows me to do the most amazing thing. just as a moment ago you saw me return a script object as the result of a handler, now I'm going to return a handler as the result of a handler. You see? So here we go. So I'm going to call the routine make my day. I'm going to call that handler. What does it say to do? It says return S's say day. Well, S is a script object inside make my day. And what does it say day? It's a handler. Therefore, when I'm all done, what's going to come plopping out the end here? Oh, I guess I shouldn't use that image. What's going to come plopping out?
It's right in the day.
What's going to come plopping out the end here from make my day, from calling make my day, is a handler. And that handler is going to be handed over to the variable D, just as I was doing with the variable X in the previous example. And then I'm going to call it. And that's going to work, because D is a handler. What handler? It's this handler. So I expect to see a display dialogue telling me that today is Thursday. Okay, let's see if it works. 1, 2, 3, go. And it works! Yo-ho-ho! Oh, excuse me a minute.
Does this one have real-world application? Or is it a vanishing zero or a zero?
Is this one of those metaphysical questions about which of our worlds is realer? No. If you spent the 60s the way I did, this world is pretty real. So I don't know. I would have to say yes and no. Look, let me say something about the real-worldness of all of these. A lot of these features are features of a lot of other programming languages. And in those programming languages, they are useful. They're part of the language. In AppleScript, because of the peculiar way in which it got written, these features are almost never used. And just about all of them were discovered entirely by accident. Not by accident, but by experimentation. By me. I mean, my book did something that no book had ever done. I explored completely what AppleScript does. Now, at the time, there was someone else on Earth who knew all this stuff, Mark Aldred, but he wasn't telling. I did need his help, however, to discover all this stuff. But nobody had ever sort of brought forward a lot of these features. They hadn't been worked out in detail, you know what I mean? So I did was I just tried everything. I just wrote script after script after script after script to see whether AppleScript would complain and discover that these things were possible. So they're in there, but nobody uses them for anything. But I will try to show a sort of example later where that one kind of gets useful. All right. Okay, so I showed you how to create a handler and a handler. Okay, stupid scoping tricks. This is the David Letterman part of the talk. Stupid scoping tricks. Yes, you can pass a handler to a handler as a parameter. Now, the hard part is, look, a handler is a variable. We proved that already. Therefore, a handler can be the parameter to another handler. So I should be able to hand a handler as a parameter to another handler and tell that other handler as part of what it does to call the handler that I handed it. But not so fast. It turns out that is very difficult to do. And I think I must have worked for 2 weeks trying to figure out whether it was possible, and one day I stumbled on the solution. The solution is you can pass a handler as a parameter to a handler, but if you want to call that handler from inside the handler that you handed it to, you have to assign it to a property of a script object inside that handler. You may be wondering what kind of person spends his time figuring this out. All right, what's this example? Oh, this is that example. Okay. In order to get you into this slowly, so it's not to blow your minds completely, what I've done is I've taken the example from the previous example. So you see, there's H1 and H2. They're the same H1 and H2. There's L, a list made up of H1, H2. Here's the display dialog. Here I am setting X to that handler. Okay? So far, it's all the same as it was before.
Now, here's the new part. Down here, I've got a handler called do this. And it takes one parameter called what. Now, let me tell you up front. What is supposed to be a handler? So this line down here, do this, is going to take x. And it's calling do this and handing x in as a parameter. So x is going to be what? And what is x? Well, it's item 1 of L or item 2 of L. That's either H1 or H2. So it's a handler. I'm handing a handler in to do this as its parameter. And then inside do this, I'm going to call it. But notice the elaborate song and dance that I have to use in order to do that. You can't just say what with parentheses after it. It doesn't work. You can't do that. What you do is you make a script object with a property. Assign the value of that property to the parameter that came in. Now you can call it by way of the script object. So I dive in. So the first thing I do is I take the what that came in and I assign it to the property H inside the script object. Then I jump into the script object, grab its H, which is now this handler, and call it as a handler with parentheses, and presto, it'll work.
So this does exactly the same thing the previous example does, but it demonstrates that I can pass the handler into a handler and still call it. And here we go. And there we go. There's my new window. And again, there's my new Hello World document. All set. Now this, as I say in my book, this is the highest achievement of the AppleScripter's art. This is a practical example of why you would want to be able to hand a handler to a handler as a parameter. Why would you want to hand a handler to a handler as a parameter? It's because the handler that you're handing the handler to is supposed to do an operation on something, but it doesn't know until runtime what the operation is. You want to leave that open. You want a general case where this handler can receive the handler that's coming in and use it. This is a very serious aspect of programming languages. In fact, this one feature is what the Ruby language is all about. There's a lot of buzz about the Ruby language. The core of the Ruby language is its ability to do this kind of thing. Well, it turns out that AppleScript has the ability to do this kind of thing, just that nobody knows, unless they've read my book. So what is the problem that I set out to solve? Well, again, AppleScript does all this stuff with lists, but it has failed to provide the tools that you need to work with lists. Remember the last example that I gave was, you give me the index number of the item that you want eliminated from the list, and I'll give you back a new list, which is the old list, with that item eliminated. In this example, you give me a list, and you also give me a test. You give me a handler, which is a test. It returns true or false. And I will apply that test. When I say I am make sublist, okay? I will apply the test that you give me to the list that you give me. And I will return a new list consisting only of those members of the list for which the test is true. Now, this is obviously a very useful thing to be able to do. Every deep programming language has this. Every deep programming language has the ability to do this. Here's a list, here's a test, give me only the members of the list that passed the test. But it's very hard to write this in AppleScript unless you know how to do it. It turns out that I've now told you everything you need to know to write it. So now we're going to write it. So let's look at the pieces. Here is the list, and here is the test. Let's start with the test. It's a handler. It's a routine that returns true or false. So what I'm going to do for this test is I'm going to return only numbers. So if it's a number, it's true. If it's not a number, it's not true.
If it's a number, it's true. If it's not a number, it's not true. So give me an X, and I'll look at its class. If its class is one of these, real, integer, or number, it's a number. And so I'll return true. If it's something else, like a string, hey or ho, then I'm going to return false. So my test is called isNumber because it tests whether something is a number. Returns true if you give it a number, and it returns false if you give it something that's not a number. What I do is I take the list and I take the test. Notice how I'm taking this. Notice how the second parameter over here is a handler name. It's the name of this handler. I take those two things and I hand them to make sublist. And I claim that make sublist will then return the list 1, 2, 3. Because 1, 2, and 3 in that list are numbers and the others are not. Now, everything that I have said up to this moment is used in this one example. First of all, it uses recursion. Remember recursion? That was in the first example. Don't remember back that far, yes? It was in there. I know you've lost a lot of brain cells between now and then, but it was in there. But the very first thing that it does is make a script object. Why? Because you're handing me a handler as one of my parameters, and the only way that I'm going to be able to call that handler as one of my parameters inside a handler is to make a script object inside the handler and assign the handler to a property. That's what I showed you in the example we just saw. So the first thing I do is I have a script object that I call filterer. I have a property called criterion. The very first thing I do is I take whatever the handler is and assign it. Now I can call it. Now criterion is a callable thing. And here you see me calling it. I call criterion on the first item. And now I recurse. If calling a criterion on the first item of L runs gives me a result true, I include it in the result. And I filter out the rest of the thing. If it returns false, then I leave it out and return just the rest of the thing. And in order to do that, I've got a handler inside a handler, which is legal because I've got the handler inside a script object inside the handler. That means I can do it. And here's the only executable line in the handler. It goes inside the script object filterer. It finds the handler filter H and calls it on the list. The handler filter H knows what this property is, because that came in already. The property is the criterion handler, and it calls that handler. It tests against every single member of the list, recursing down as it goes. And I didn't have to use recursion. You never have to, but it's cute. So here we go, and we get the answer 1, 2, 3. And just to prove that it's really doing that in real time, what I'll do is I'll change this to not, make a different test. I'll run that. Now I get hey and ho instead. That's got to be one of the greatest scripts I ever wrote. Well, I've used up all my time. I could go on. I have lots more examples. How many people would like to see... No, you'd be bored. Right. What are you doing? Get off my computer. Just because you bought it for me doesn't mean you get to use it. Holy crap, he's got somebody else's computer attached to my computer. Can you do that? Yeah, spit that thing out.
Take us a moment to spit.
Yeah, and don't take it out without spitting it either, because then it'll say, oh, you put me away improperly.
Come on, come on, come on. This delay is my fault.
Yeah, you can at least run it. What's that?
That's what I want to ask you.
You mean I'm supposed to be able to guess what this does?
Yes.
I have no idea. The correct answer instantly. I have no idea, and I said I have no idea. No, this is that's a perfectly serious. You know this. You know I used to teach classics, and somebody, you know, I'd ask some question, and the guy would say, you know, I don't know. I'm a tester. You get an A. That's correct. You don't know. You told the truth.
It looks like your stuff.
All right. Okay.
And would somebody write this without having read your book?
No, they never would. They never would. Okay, on example, what do we do here? All right, so we tell the application finder. Okay, first of all, notice that it's not enough to define a handler. This is something that confuses even experienced programmers. Definition and calling are two different things. So when he showed me the example, the first thing I did was to say, okay, you've got a handler, but do you ever call that handler? Because if you never call it, I can just ignore it. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Defining is not calling. So my eye immediately drops to here, and I say, all right, okay, you do call it. This is important. So the first thing that happens in the program is we call the example handler. Well, now I have to read the example. All right. So what do? Well, we get the items of desktop. And in every case, we create a script object and tell that script object to run. Fine. And what does the script object do? Well, nothing if the name of X doesn't end with script, with scupt. But if it does, then we log it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a log consisting of all the script objects sitting on the desktop. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. On to the next part. Did I leave something out?
I don't know what it does, Matt. I didn't write it.
Who did write it?
Do you have any guesses?
Guess what you did.
Is this an example that I used on some earlier occasion and I forgot?
No,
about?
I'm not trying to do that.
So I didn't write it either?
No, you didn't.
Okay, whoa. What you're telling me is you didn't write it and I didn't write it?
No. Would you be shocked if I told you that an Apple employee wrote it?
Yes, I would. What Apple employee would know this? Oh, so an Apple employee who's read my book wrote it.
Well, I don't know if he's read your book or not, but he wrote it here a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So
was this Chris Page.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are you encouraged now?
No. These are useless features of language. This is not the part of the language he needs to know about. That's ridiculous. I can't get rid of this thing.
Okay. I'll fix
get this
later.
Thing off my frickin' computer. Okay. It's like that thing in Alien. It's like grabs a hold of my computer and sucking the air. It's put a tube down my computer's throat.
I'm sorry. I'm now really blown it. Hold on. There is a commented example.
Yeah, well, he's not saying anything I didn't just say. All right, I'm quitting this. I'm going to get this thing off my computer.
You're going to have to give me time.
You it's because of Adobe Illustrator.
Yeah, cancel that, but that wasn't it. Close that. No, you better quit something. Yeah. Script editor.
Restart.
You're dead.
This is a testability.
I'm making a tape of this, and I'm taking it to the police.
I'll lock you both up.
I can't quit Keynote. I need it.
It's okay. Are you done with your talk, though?
Apparently I am. I had about 15 more minutes, but I guess we're never going to see that. All right, so much
your
for the
stuff should still work.
Hey, good picture. All these photos are by me, by the way.
That's and they look better on here than they do in the projector.
My computer exploded.
No, it's not.
No, that's on the line.
All right, I'll give you a choice. All right. You can either see... You can either, I'll give you another example. Right? I prepared different kinds of examples. You can either see another purely AppleScript example, or I can show you stuff that I've been doing using Ruby instead of AppleScript to script applications.
Ruby.
Okay. Now, I have to warn you that the guys do not want me to talk about Ruby, okay? I said this, and like Shane said, you know, well, you could have like maybe, you know, 3 minutes at the end of your hackers and slackers. You know, I wanted to do like a whole day on Ruby, and Shane's like, no, this is an AppleScript. It's not called the Ruby Procession Theory.
That's a good one.
It is one. We have that. You didn't know that, did you? It's not confined entirely to Australia.
What do you think about Python?
Well, it's a matter of taste. I was just trying to show examples of using another language instead of AppleScript, and I picked Ruby. You know what I mean? The Python will do just as well. The hook into AppleScript is the very same hook. It's by that guy, Hamish Sanderson. That's what I was going to show.
Okay.
How many people would like to see that? Some. How many people would like to see an AppleScript example? Well, how many people would like to just get the heck out of here? Well, why don't you get that? I mean, I'm not calling you. What is the problem? All right. All right, I'll show you the Ruby example. Look, either you like this or you don't, okay? I don't know how this is going to go over. I'm just using you guys as a thing I use.
An audience object.
Master of languages.
That's right. Don't forget. I have a PhD. Okay, look. This is an actual real-world problem, all right? I'm starting up Microsoft Word, which is going to take a minute because this is an Intel machine, and when you start up a PowerPC application under Rosetta. I haven't got Word 2008 yet, so this
it'll
is
be slower.
Don't bother.
It is?
It's
yes.
Terrible.
Okay, well, that was pretty unanimous.
Exponentially slower.
That was a pretty unanimous declaration there. Okay, this is a real problem that we actually have. I don't know whether you know this, but I write these PDF books called Take Control Of, okay, for this publisher, Take Control. It's actually the Tidbits guys operating under another name. And they came to me one day and we said, all right, we've got this problem. Let us explain to you what it is. We want you to script Microsoft Word to solve the following problem. Let me show you the problem. Okay. And you see these things in blue? Every one of these things in blue is in a style called internal reference. And that means it is an internal reference. And that means that somewhere else in the document, there is a header that's got one of these names. So there's a header, there's a chapter called Know What's New. There's a chapter called Install Intelligently. There's a chapter called Dominate the Doc. Your mission, they said to me, if you decide to accept it, is to take each one of these blue things in the internal reference style and turn it into an actual link, a cross-reference link, a hyperlink to the header, the chapter title, that it's the same as. And that way, when we make the PDF out of your book, the user will be able to click it, and it'll be a link, and it'll jump to the correct chapter. Do you see? That was the assignment. And I wrote a script that would do this in AppleScript. And I'll show it to you. This is the script up to the point where I abandoned AppleScript altogether. It's very big and complicated. And it's got some major serious problems. For example, it turns out that... Well, let me show you in a specific spot in it. It turns out that... Well, here's an example. It turns out that there were several occasions on which I needed to trim the final spaces off of something. Well, that's quite hard to do in AppleScript. I had to make a repeat loop, and I had to keep like removing the last character for as long as the thing ended with a space until I got the thing that I wanted. I had to write in any other modern scripting language. This would be trivial. There's always a command, trim. It gets rid of the white space at the end. I didn't have that. And that same thing here, I had to write this really complicated thing to sort of clean up a name. I wanted to make sure the name consisted only of these legal characters and no other characters. And I had to get rid of any character that wasn't one of those characters. I had to cycle through the whole thing getting rid of all of them. Any other language will just give you, like, you can just make a command saying, you know, filthy, just do this, you know. Match up the characters. Just like I was saying before. You give me a test, I'll give you all the characters that pass the test. And in AppleScript, there's no easy way to do that. So in the end, I abandoned AppleScript, and I did it instead using Ruby. Now, I want to show you what it looks like to talk AppleScript in Ruby. So here's the Ruby version. I'm not saying you have to use this method. I'm just saying this is what happened to me. Okay, first of all, let's take a look at those routines. Okay, this is the one that cleans up the things that are not those characters. One line. Why? Because I've got regular expressions. And this regular expression basically just says, okay, you know, here are the characters. If it's not one of those characters, if it's not one of these characters or the capitalized equivalent of it, just substitute nothing for it. One line instead of cycling through the whole thing. And you notice there is no routine to trim the spaces off the end because that's a built-in command in Ruby. That just kept happening to me. Okay. Now, what happens when the time comes to actually talk to another application? Now, remember, what you're doing in AppleScript when you send a message to another application is you're forming what's called an Apple event. Microsoft Word doesn't care who sent the Apple event or how it was formed. It doesn't care whether you used AppleScript to form the Apple event or whether you used Ruby to form the Apple event. So let's look at an example where I'm actually sending an Apple event so you can see what the kind of thing you have to say. Well, here's an example. Okay. There's a thing in Microsoft Word called show hidden bookmarks. Now, in AppleScript, I would say, tell active document to set show hidden bookmarks to true. In Ruby, I say, active show hidden bookmarks set true. So I'm using the same vocabulary, it's just that it's ordered in a different way. So every time the time comes for me to actually talk to Microsoft Word, I'm using the terminology, but the whole program is living inside Ruby. Now another advantage that I found in using Ruby was that in AppleScript, I had to make a data structure that was slow. Here's the data structure that I needed to make. Now remember what the problem is. I need to link up the guys in blue to the correct case. So what I did was, this is what I did. I went through the text of the Word document, all right? And let's say I come to this blue guy, Appendix A, How to Succeed. All right, I've got a list of records, and what I do is I run down the entire list. I gather this list beforehand. I run down the entire list until I find one that has as one of its keys Appendix A, How to Succeed. Okay, same thing down here. I got a problem because I also want Appendix A, even without the How to Succeed part, to link to the same thing. So I come down that, I run down, find the one. Okay, and then I know that's the right guy. That was very time consuming because it meant I had to go through the entire list looking for the right one every single new blue guy that I came to. Now in Ruby you don't have to do that because Ruby gives you a thing called a hash. So in Ruby it's one step away. In Ruby you say, okay, I've got Appendix A, How to Succeed. Do you have a guy who's called Appendix A, How to Succeed? Yes. I've got Appendix A. Do you have a guy called Appendix A? Yes. Instant. Instant reference to the correct paragraph and I'm done. So the Ruby version is insanely fast. And to show you the Ruby version in action, I'll actually run it. So just to show you how fast this is, here's the Ruby version, and I'll just run it. Now, the slow part is at the beginning. At the very beginning, there's a pause while we gather information about the paragraphs. And I've put up some notifications as I'm gathering them. So this part is a delay. What it's doing is it's getting information about every heading paragraph. And I lied. Not only do I have to get information about the heading paragraphs, but it turns out that according to what I was told to do, I have to learn about some other kinds of paragraphs called figure number paragraphs. And okay, I'm done. Now I'm running through the document. Here we go. And watch the blue guy. Every time it moves, I'm moving down through the document. So the numbers that you're seeing up here are how many I've processed. 30. You have no idea how much faster this was than the AppleScript version. Because every time I find one, I can just process it. What's slowing me down, actually, is not Ruby. In this case, it's Microsoft Word. You'll notice that every once in a while, Microsoft Word will pause and reformat the entire document. That's time consuming.
You are running the code from TextRender?
From TextMate.
TextMate?
Yeah. That's what I use for editing Ruby. So you can see I really am talking. I mean, I'm doing exactly what you would do in AppleScript. I'm sending Apple events to, it's not any different. But I just found this much more convenient. I was able to grow. You know, a problem that you have when you're writing a program is that the program will change. And I call that growing the program. And as soon as I switched over to Ruby, I found it much easier to grow the program. Okay, we've come all the way through the thing. Now what it goes back to the beginning and cleans up. So now it's going through again. Mending blank internal reference texts. So it's running through again looking for them. And that's the end. Now that took, I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you how long it took because I've got a thing that says. It took 125 seconds. Now I know that seems like a long time, but believe me, this was taking 20 minutes before. And the reason is not because Ruby is faster than AppleScript. It's because Ruby gave me a way of storing the information that I could get at much faster. And I didn't have to write all that code. I mean, there were certain things that were just much easier. So all I can say is I've had a happier time since I started writing stuff in Ruby as a way of talking AppleScript, as a way of talking Apple events to scriptable applications. And this works on many scriptable applications.
You can run from Ruby, AppleScript code?
Right. What I'm using is a thing called RB AppScript. Do I have an internet connection?
Not yet. Maybe mine.
What's it called? Do you know? Dolphin AP?
Yeah.
Okay, so you Google RB AppScript. It thinks I'm not connected. Okay, there it is. And what that is it's a thing that you it's a library for Ruby that allows you to take any application and talk to it using. You saw that I used the actual terminology, only I was using that terminology in Ruby. You saw examples of those lines. Those were lines of Ruby, but I was talking to Microsoft Word. I'll show you another one. Right, like that, like this. Those are Apple events. I'm talking to Microsoft Word with Apple events. Right, active.count each paragraph. That's the Ruby equivalent of count every paragraph of the active document. Active.paragraphs I text object.style.get. That's the Ruby equivalent of get the style of the text object of paragraph I of the active document. So it's exactly the same, except it's in reverse order. But you can see I'm talking AppleScript. I'm using AppleScript terminology. That's an Apple event. The answer comes back. The answer comes back. It comes back as a perfectly reasonable Ruby object. But then lines like this are just Ruby. I'm just doing stuff. All right, I think I should stop. I've kept you long enough. Okay, thanks a bunch.